This is an ABC podcast.
Hello and welcome to Pacific Review from ABC Radio Australia. I'm Evan Wasuka. Coming up, it's touted as a Pacific cryptocurrency paradise that's up for sale to Australians. But locals are a bit more sceptical.
Who authorised that? Who gives? I mean, the question here is it legal for such to happen?
We take a look at the impact of the rising cost of living on Pacific Islanders in Australia.
A lot of families are going to have to cut back on the expenses and the living costs as well, because any extra cost, it's a challenging time for us.
And a new $7 bill is turning heads in Fiji.
I've asked my close contacts in Suva to go down to the Reserve Bank of Fiji. And then I've got family flying into Australia, so they're bringing those notes with me as keepsakes and souvenirs.
More on those stories coming up. But first, the Pacific Islands Forum is the major political grouping in the Pacific. But for the past year, a leadership wrangle has been threatening to split the body. Micronesian members were threatening to leave after they were overlooked for the top job to lead the forum, and a candidate from Polynesia was chosen instead. But an intervention by Australia to fly in Pacific leaders for an emergency face-to-face meeting in Fiji may have averted disaster. And it comes at a critical time as China intensifies its efforts to strike a Pacific agreement with regional nations. The president of the Federated States of Micronesia, David Paniuelo, says talks have helped to preserve Pacific unity.
There's really nothing that replaces in-person meeting. And so at the 11th hour after, you know, the political dialogue mechanism was established by the forum to have that PDM work with the MBS countries to come to a resolution or find a resolution on our reforms that we were asking for from the day that our candidate didn't make it. And I believe that the dialogue that was going on was on and off. It was very difficult. And Prime Minister of Fiji, as the current chair of the Pacific Islands Forum, extended an invitation to the MBS countries. Unfortunately, because of the short notice, not all of us can make it, but myself and the president of Palau, my dear friend, and a minister that represented the president of RMI came to Suva at the invitation. We thank the Australian government for providing the transport, which made it easier to come directly from our capitals to Suva. And so June 7th, we convened that meeting. Prime Ministers of Samoa and Cook Islands joined in. Papua New Guinea Prime Minister didn't make it because of very other commitments that he's engaged with. So during the course of our meeting over the last 2 days, we came to a resolution to address a number of reforms that are to be instituted in the forum, mechanism.
Yes, I wanted to ask you about those reforms. Can you tell us more detail what those reforms are, President Paniuelo?
Well, I want to say that the reform package was established in an agreement and as a path towards, strengthening Pacific unity. And that is that we reach a common ground so that the current Secretary General will remain in his post and over the next 18 months. And then comes 2024, a Micronesian candidate will come in with the new terms that we are proposing in the reform package that has been agreed to for a five-year term. And then to be rotated among the sub-regions of Micronesia, Polynesia, and Melanesia, including the establishment of two secretary generals under the SG, deputy secretary generals under the secretary general position. Also, we agreed that there will be an immediate Pacific Ocean Commissioner's position to be created, and Micronesian candidate will be given that post to be an independent Ocean Commissioner's office. Office to be also established in Micronesia. We also agreed that there will be a sub-PIF office to be established also in Micronesia, with something would be similar to a sub-region country director to be, you know, managing it.
Wow, so quite significant changes there. And as you mentioned, you said that Australia was very helpful flying yourself and your counterparts from Micronesia, or some of them at least, to Fiji. What role did Australia play in these meetings?
I can share with you that without that transport direct from our capitals to Suva, we would not have made it at this 11th hour. And so that also was a significant gesture, given that flights within the region are very difficult to reach respective capitals. So I will say again that I believe a big dark cloud has been lifted, you know, over the Blue Pacific continent in favor of regionalism or regional solidarity.
That was David Panuelo, president of the Federated States of Micronesia, speaking there to the ABC's Priyanka Srinivasan. Here in Australia, the Reserve Bank has lifted the cash rate by half a percentage point to 0.85%. That's the biggest rate hike in 22 years and the first back-to-back one since May 2010. That will further tighten the cost of living pressures for communities already feeling the pinch, including Pacific Islanders. Dubravka Volodya with more.
Milk is $3.30. Apples are $5 a kilo. Food in supermarkets around Sydney has become pricier. But it's not only food. Gas and electricity, along with petrol, have also been getting more expensive. Solomon Islander Philip Leong says these rising costs have put pressure on his community.
We tend to find men to find extra hours, doing extra overtime hours to work harder to, you know, make ends meet, because it's an extra burden on, you know, to put food on the table as well.
Treasurer Jim Chalmers told ABC News Breakfast that things will only get harder with inflation set to rise.
This is an entrenched challenge in our economy. Inflation is expected to get worse before it gets better.
Interest rates are expected to climb further as the Reserve Bank tries to curb inflation and control rising food and energy prices. Mr. Leong, who's also the president of the Solomon Islands Victoria Association, says families will have to tighten their belts further.
Well, it'll affect, you know, individual families greatly, because an extra, you know, an extra $100 on the table, that means a lot of families going to have to cut back on the expenses and the living costs as well, because any extra cost, It's a challenging time for us.
And it's not just homeowners affected. The country's rental market is also worsening, with the pool of available properties shrinking in the past 2 years and driving up prices. With more pressure on mortgages, many landlords are set to increase rents further. The head of public policy at Melbourne City Mission, Shauna Moore, says many Pacific Islanders are feeling the pinch, including young people.
We're seeing many Pacifica families and young people seeking emergency accommodation. So we run a number of youth homelessness refuges and programs in the west of Melbourne, and it's really common to see about 2 to 3 young people coming to the homelessness access point every week.
And the rate rise is set to put even more pressure on the community.
Interest rate rises will have an impact on household budgets, and Pacifica families were already under so much financial pressure, for example, that, you know, they can't access NDIS if they have a child or family member in need of support. Many from the community are really being forced into homelessness and poverty, and we are concerned about this rising cost of living and rental pressures in the west of Melbourne for the community.
But before it comes to that, Major Warren Elliott from the charity The Salvation Army says people should seek help sooner rather than later.
Don't wait too long. Come and see us when you need to.
Major Warren Elliott from the charity The Salvation Army with Dubravka Volodya reporting. A team of international investors exploring the use of cryptocurrency and blockchain technology to sell land on an island in Vanuatu. The Satoshi Island Project is inviting people to buy so-called land NFTs that would give them access to the island and the ability to build houses there. It promises to bring fame and fortune to Vanuatu, but critics are skeptical the project can get off the ground. Priyanka Srinivasan with more.
It might sound like science fiction.
We really want to create this utopia, this hub, this crypto city. That was our vision and our dream from the very beginning.
But Sydney businessman Dennis Troyak and the team behind the Satoshi Island Company want that dream to become a reality. They're selling pockets of land on Lautaro, an island to the north of Vanuatu. But this isn't a piece of real estate you can buy with cash. Instead, the team is offering blocks as NFTs, using cryptocurrency to complete the purchase. Mr. Troyak drummed up support for the project while speaking recently on the social media platform Discord.
We reduced the price of the land NFTs. So essentially now, now you can grab a block of land for what, about 18,000 USD? I mean, an absolute bargain. It's an amazing opportunity.
Satoshi Island is also selling futuristic modular homes to be built on the island, which will create what they're calling a cryptocurrency paradise.
So we're looking at about 60,000 to 90,000 range of the modules, depending on the model that you choose. And this comes with installation, delivery, connection to utilities and land preparation and furniture as well. We encourage everyone to build because at the end of the day, the vision is to build the city. There's no point of everybody sitting on blocks of land and waiting for something to happen when no one's buying homes and no one's building.
Cryptocurrency is heavily regulated in Vanuatu, with only certain people and companies granted licenses to trade in the digital assets. Land ownership is also highly restricted. No one can buy land in Vanuatu unless they have customary connection to it. And foreigners can acquire leases for no more than 75 years. Joel Simo, a former member of Vanuatu's Lands Council, is skeptical about the Satoshi Island project.
He's going to sell the land using cryptocurrency. Who authorized that? The question here is it legal for such to happen, in Vanuatu? That's the question that I have. And the other thing is, where does he get his permission to do that? If he works with the government, I think it's going to be, my guess would be that there's going to be some things done before that happens. But if they're finding some shortcut to that, then it needs to be looked again.
As far as you know, have you ever heard of land just being sold like this before in Vanuatu?
No. The process is quite long. It has to go through what we call the Nakamal, the area, and the Nakamal, and then the area, and then to the province, and then to the national government itself to be approved. Before you do that, to sell land in the country, you have got to have the consent of the person who gives you the land.
Mr. Troyak from the Satoshi Island Company says they are not planning to sell the land itself, but they're selling exclusive rights to the land under a licensing agreement. He also says the project has the consent of customary landowners. The agreement, he says, is issued by a company registered in the Marshall Islands and not under Vanuatu's jurisdiction. Pacific Beat has asked to see the license agreement. We've been told it will be soon published online. Speaking to prospective Satoshi Island investors on Discord, Mr. Troyak said they are waiting to generate sufficient interest before selling any land.
Once we have enough interest, enough offers on our land, then we'll be able to execute and accept those offers. And then we'll be comfortable that we have enough funds, enough capital to be able to go and start our development process. We will not be taking anyone's money until we are confident that we have enough interest, enough offers to have enough capital to begin the infrastructure.
That was Dennis Troyak from the Satoshi Island Project, ending that report from Priyanka Srinivasan. on an athletics track in the middle of Queensland's sugarcane belt, quite literally, some of the Pacific's finest athletes have been strutting their stuff this week. The Oceania Athletics Championships are happening in Mackay, and despite some visa issues and the never-ending saga of COVID-19 restrictions, 19 Pacific countries are represented. As Nick Fogarty reports, the event marks the start of a feverishly busy period for the region's best track and field performers.
Away in the first of two heats of the men's under 16, 400 from the inside, Harlow, Minna, Allen, Clough, Ticehurst and Corcoran.
It's a unique setting for an athletics track, with the bright red of the synthetic lanes carved out of a field of dark green sugarcane. A sugar mill provides the backdrop, and further away there's a mountain range, beyond the central Queensland town of Mackay. Yvonne Toohey is the president of Queensland Multicultural Lions Club, which has had a big hand in organising the Oceania Championships, and she says the event has a distinct Pacific Island flavour.
Mackay has a high population of South Sea Islanders and Pacific Islanders, and they're all here. It feels like the whole lot of them are here at the track, supporting the Pacific Islands that are here competing, the athletes. So it's a great atmosphere here.
Athletes from 19 Pacific nations have been competing at the event, as well as representatives from India and Taiwan. The Oceania Para Athletics Championships are happening at the same time. And despite a strong representation from Australian and New Zealand athletes, there have been some dominant performances by Pacific Islanders, and notably in the women's shot put. Yvonne Mullins, Executive Director for the Oceania Athletics Association, has been trackside following events.
I think the performance in the Pacific Islanders that we're going to really hone in on is going to be that of Adamama Tuifafaiva from Tonga. She won the women's shot put, the open women's shot put. She did PB. She's been here. She hasn't had a coach for a little while, and she got here and managed to find Dame Valerie Adams from New Zealand, and they've gotten together, and she's been coaching her, and look, she's had a huge improvement, and a gold medal for Tonga in the women's open shot put. So we thought that was a fabulous result.
Fiji's also been well represented, with dual national record holder Benuve Tambakanthoro out of retirement and performing strongly again.
Benuve Tambakanthoro from Fiji, been the sprinter of the last few years in the Pacific Games and mini games. He's just come back to Australia for a bit of to start training again. He's probably been a little bit off, hasn't had any competitions, but look, he made the final of the 100, the final of the 200. His 200 was certainly a better race than his 100. But he's looking good to go over to the Pacific Games in the Pacific Mini Games in Saipan now as well.
Those mini games, hosted by the US Commonwealth of the Northern Marianas, start just a few days from now. And Yvonne Mullins says Oceania's best athletes will be in almost constant competition for the next few months.
From here, it's a bit of a whirlwind tour for some of them. They're going to be here, and then we're heading off to Saipan to the Pacific Mini Games. They start on about the 21st of June, so most of the athletes that are here from the Pacific are going to go up to there. Australia will put a small team in at the Pacific Mini Games in Saipan as well, but a lot of the athletes from here are going to head there. P&G sent a really good, strong contingent here, and they're using this as their pre-departure before they go to Saipan. From there, some of the athletes are going to head to the World Championships in Eugene, Oregon, the USA, where they'll compete against the best of the world. And then from there, we'll have some go over to the Commonwealth Games. So as I say, it's almost 2 months of travelling around the world at the moment.
And it's that travel which is still proving to be the most difficult part for many athletes, with some almost not making it to Australia and the championships at Mackay.
Look, it wasn't easy getting visas to start with, but we've been lucky enough to manage to get all of our visas through now. You know, maybe it's a political statement, but certainly there was a change of government and things happened for us, and that was a good thing in terms of us being able to get visas. COVID, of course, COVID testing, always difficult, border restrictions, some of the countries, Marshall Islands, still can get out of the country but can't get back into the country. So, you know, some issues like that have certainly made it interesting. We weren't sure if we'd get everybody here, but we've managed to get them here, and they're having their best competition that they've had, their first competition for the last 2 years.
An integral part of that competition has been the distinct mix of local and international, which was most clearly displayed in the opening ceremony, which featured Pacific Island dancers in cultural costume. Yvonne Toohey from the Queensland Multicultural Lions Club was the opening ceremony's organiser.
And what we had was we had the Cook Islands representing Polynesia, we had Kiribati representing Micronesia, and then we had the Solomon Islands representing Melanesia. So we were able to get the three groups to cover all those Pacific Islands that are here at the track. It was a great opening ceremony. We had our head for Mackay Indigenous, Philip Kemp, who has written a couple of children's books in Indigenous language here, so he's quite important. And he did the opening ceremony, followed by the Dej. It was a great opening ceremony and very solemn because we are very proud of who we are up here and just showing the islands, the people that are visiting, whether they be parents, athletes or officials, that we exist, that the Pacific Island people do exist in Mackay, and we're renowned for our culture by way of performances and food.
President of Queensland's Multicultural Lions Club, Yvonne Tui, and the reporter there was Nick Fogarty. There's a banknote circulating in Fiji that rugby fans around the world are trying desperately to get their hands on. It's a limited edition $7 note featuring the men's and women's rugby sevens team. Launched to celebrate the Tokyo Olympic medal success by both sides, supporters say it's a big moment, especially for the Fijianas, who have long been under-resourced and underappreciated. But now, as Jordan Fennell reports, they're having their moment in the sun.
When the Fijiana won bronze at the Tokyo 2020 Olympics, Fiji exploded in celebration. It was the first time the women's team had won a medal on the world stage, and supporters were ecstatic. But for Fijians living in Australia who are unable to be amongst their own people, the vibe was pretty downbeat.
I'll tell you what, it was such an anti-climax. We're so used to watching it in a country where everybody's up and there's horns tooting and everybody's celebrating. And then we look outside the window and it's total darkness.
Nesau Tuindraki lives in Melbourne now, and she says that it's that separation from home that makes her so keen to own one of the new $7 banknotes.
For us especially, who are living outside the country, who have migrated, it's a big thing for us.
The note was launched by Fiji's Prime Minister, Frank Bainimarama, to commemorate Fijiana's bronze and a second Olympic gold for Fiji men's sevens team. It's the second time the country has released a $7 note. The first time celebrated the men's gold medal win at the Rio Olympics in 2016. Zach Khan, who's a Fijian living in Sydney, has one of those notes framed on his mantelpiece.
Just having a piece of history in the house. So like my dad, he went to Fiji, he asked me what I wanted, and I said, no, when you come back, just bring $7 notes.
And now he's in possession of the new note, and the plan is to have it sitting side by side with the first one, but with the Fijianas' faces in prime position.
Fiji rugby is like kind of known for like the patriarchal way that they do things, so it's good to see that, you know, women also getting a bit of spotlight.
Women's rugby in Fiji has faced barrier after barrier, from cultural sensitivities around women playing the sport to not having access to quality equipment and funding. Despite this, the women have continued to succeed, whether it's the Fijiana Sevens winning at the Olympics or the Fijiana Endures dominance in their Super W debut here in Australia. Sarah Raisulu is the manager of the Valkyries, a local women's rugby club in Suva, who says that the wins have energised their team.
Right after Tokyo, our inbox just kept popping about girls wanting to join a local rugby club.
The $7 note is currently circulating through Fiji, and Sarah was at a petrol station when she first got given one as change.
I tried so hard not to spend it, but I did. Well, I think the next time I get one, I'll probably frame it or something.
She says while it's great to see the Fijiana on the currency, she hopes to see more funding go towards creating pathways for young girls to build rugby careers.
Even at club level, basic skills weren't being taught. So if we can fix that at these early ages, then you can imagine what can happen if they were to come into national camp.
Back in Australia, Nesau Tuindraki is running quite the operation to get the new $7 note into the country.
I actually send money back to Fiji, and I've asked my close contacts in Suva to go down to the Reserve Bank of Fiji. And then I've got family flying into Australia, so they're bringing those notes.
And it's a process that she says will be well worth it.
In 20, 30 years' time, those notes are going to be something that our family members are going to cherish.
Fijiana fans, Nesau Tuindraki, the report. Reporter there was Jordan Fennell. And that's it from Pacific Review. I'm Evan Wasuka. Thank you for listening, and do join us again at the same time next week for more news and views from around the Pacific.